Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
And Josh Brown.
Hello there.
Wasn't expecting the hello there, although I should have been, because it's every single time episode 3's biggest fan, Ben Roy Turner, giving me the finger guns on the video. But we're going to dive into pretty much just what we've been playing. You guys have rediscovered The Witcher 3, one of the best games of all time. But also, we tend to ask on Twitter on the hashtag WCGP for questions. And we've got a whole bunch came in, so I'm going to do a little question sandwich, do some questions at the beginning, talk a bit about The Witcher. I guess I would make it a Witcher sandwich. And then we'll get to some more at the end. So we'll see. But I really like this question. It comes in from Nondi, who said, do you think that if Fallout 76 went onto a service like Game Pass for a month, it would help its popularity? My immediate take is yes, because I think if you remove the price tag, at least people would try it out. But Josh, you made a little exhale noise there. What do you think?
Well, this is the big... Right, okay. I don't want to, crap all over Fallout too much, but the reality of the situation is, when the game came out, we got a lot of... I think we got 4 review copies or something, didn't we? We got a couple.
Might have done.
You got cards and postcards and stuff like that for it as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we got more than one. So to cut a long story short, I got one. And it's in Fallout 76 has been installed on my PlayStation for about 2 years now. And I still haven't touched it. So I've technically got it there for nothing. I'm still not encouraged to go to it. I think we just need to fix it, man. Like, it doesn't matter whether it costs £60 or whether it's free. If it's a broken game, fundamentally, like, no one's going to want to give it a chance. Once you put that reputation behind you, then yes, if it is on Games Pass, it might help. But to me, an influx of players like that will that not just tank it even more? If people do check it out on those numbers, will it not just, ruin the servers?
You make a very good point. I was just thinking that people would dive in and just try it, see what the hype's about. Because I don't, like, obviously, yeah, we had access to it for free. But I think just the amount of other things we were juggling with it, there was something else that came out right around the time 76 did, and it was like, this just isn't worth our time. But I think the vast majority of people who have access to Game Pass, like, that idea of just diving in and trying it does feel like a positive. But I think you'd get so many people going, trying it to laugh at it, and it doesn't hold up. Like, it's still broken as hell. Ben Roy, what's your thoughts on Fallout 76?
Look, if Phil Spencer came along and gave me Fallout 76 for included in my Game Pass package, I would try it out. I was actually watching a video from a human on the internet called Jim Stern last night, because I thought I'd catch up with the Fallout 76 discourse, and yeah, it still looks crap. But I was sitting there thinking, well, me and my friends are coming to the end of this game soon, and we need another game to just hang out on, because we can't go outside anyway.
Can't be Metal Gear Survive either. So
yeah, I mean, well, yeah. only one of us has the pokey stick game thing. And I was thinking, 76 for a moment last night, I thought 76. I went, no, it's got to be, like, I was considering buying it, but then I stepped back and was like, we're going to carry on playing Dead Rising 2. But if it came to Xbox Game Pass, I probably would download it, because what the hell?
I'm more or less in the exact same boat as you, because every few months I have this, brief moment of madness where I think, I could just play Fallout 76. I love Fallout. I want to give it a try. Maybe I could just boot it up. But what puts me off is the idea that I have to get past the grind, because for as decent as Wastelanders looks, that is really appealing to me, but I don't want to have to get to, like, a level where that's fun, or I don't have to go through all of the quests that are already in the main game, like all of the fetch quests, looking for bottles and stuff like that. I don't want to have to, like, spend 20 hours or whatever getting to the point where I can have fun. That's what puts me off more than anything else. More than the bugs or more than it's issues or something. It's the fact that I'm not on the same level playing field as Rich, who played it quite a lot. You know what I mean? Rich can jump in and enjoy what they've changed, whereas I'm going to be right there from scratch, from start. And then I have to kind of, to me, that's too much of a commitment. You know what I mean?
I would hope that they have, I would hope, the glimmer of hope that they've realized how to put people in different player pools and player buckets in regards to how long you've played and what items you have access to. As I said that sentence, I remembered that whole thing about they introduced the, someone had like a certain can of tuna and then everybody had a can of tuna. And then it was like a thing where they brought like a chest in, and if you put stuff in the chest, it deleted everything. And I just, that's just, Fallout 76 is not worth it.
Do you remember when they, the people that have paid for that pass thing that they're marked as like the rich people now, and then all the people that don't have that pass revolted and started killing them all. I mean, that game's
in there.
It sounds like a trash fire, but unless it's free on Game Pass, then I'd do it. But I don't necessarily want to part with some currency for it. It's got to be via Phil Spencer sort of thing.
If it's free and you can log in and just see like a mob of people hunting one other person as they all run away from them, I might be into that. But I don't know. I don't think I'm not guaranteed that experience. So it'll have to wait for now. But yeah, you guys have both been playing The Witcher 3. Now, this is one of my favorite games of all time, so I'm going to dive in as well. But what, I guess we'll start with you. I forget which one of you messaged first saying you were going to go back to it. I think it was you, Josh.
I think it was. And then Ben Roy said that he was going to get to it after he finished Resident Evil 7. Was that the plan?
I have almost got the platinum in Resident Evil 5.
Right.
Thank you. I just have to do an egg glitch, and then I have the platinum. Just got to, you know, pass it backwards and forwards. But yes,
you're in a perpetual state of replaying all the Resident Evils. It's like me with Friends on Netflix, that you get to the end and you just restart it again. Just go back through it. But yeah, Josh, how have you been finding The Witcher 3? What made you want to go back to it?
Well, it's funny. It's because I was watching actually a video by a YouTuber called Joseph Anderson, who's done this like big dive on the whole series. He's put the first part up, but I was watching, you know, parts of Witcher 1, and I just got like the itch. I got the itch because I was in between games. I just finished Final Fantasy VII, and I thought, you know what? I haven't played The Witcher in about 5 years, and this is making me want to go back to it. And I was wondering whether it was going to hold up because, you know, I haven't touched it since then, apart from the Blood and Wine DLC, which I played a couple of years afterwards. But I wanted to go back on it to see whether it was still one of my favorite games in 2020 as it was in 2015. And honestly, I've just been like head over heels in love with it. It's been so good. I think I pumped about 30 hours into it already. I'm still in the first act, but it holds up in a lot of ways, and it feels dated in other ways, like if that makes sense, which has been kind of strange to experience. But overall, it's still such an amazing game, and it's been such a joy to get back into it, man. Like, and I feel like I'm getting so much more out of it the second time around. There was so much content that even though I put 100 hours into the game the first time around, there's so much I missed that I'm just picking up the second time.
It's absolutely ginormous. I guess, actually, Ben Roy, what were your returning thoughts, or how have you found it going back to it?
So, a bit like Josh, I haven't played it for 5 years. My last save was 2015. I was like, God. But no, I watched the show, and then Geralt was in my mind. And I remembered how much I enjoyed Geralt as a character and how I
thought Geralt.
Geralt, however you say that, I've tried.
Jules always calls him like Geralt. It's like, what game are you playing?
So now I'm just going to call him Henry, because Henry Cavill. So I really like how I enjoyed Henry as a character, and I really want to experience Henry's journey all the way to the end. Even though I've had it spoiled for me, because I've even written about this game, like all this sort of thing. Like, I know the ending, but I'm still enjoying it going back. The first thing I did back was, I punched a lad in a village and won some coins. I was like, give me some gold coins for beating this man. I was like, you know, I could do this. Mm-hmm. And just because they changed the movement since I last played it. I think that was a problem that I had before. And also I got into this weird perpetual loop where I was just always stressing because this sword was fine, then it broke. But then my other sword was fine, then it broke. And I fixed that one and it's fine. And then I'm wearing a court jester's outfit because I don't know where to find the cool armor. And I just want to look cool and I want to kill some monsters. I don't want everything breaking. But I'm back into it. Uh-huh. It's kind of, I'm kind of back into the groove. And yeah, I think I'm back, John Wick style. And I'm actually going to put as much as I can into it for the next foreseeable 46 days.
I was going to ask, because you messaged yesterday about, like, yeah, wanting to look cool, wanting to get the armor and stuff. And then you messaged saying lots of things are breaking, which is like the armor and the weapons can break and stuff. I guess, like, for both of you, like, how have you found, like, how have you spec'd your character and how have you found the combat and stuff? Because although, like you said, Benoit, they patched it so much. They changed the way that Geralt, or they give you options on how Geralt can move. They changed the inventory and the UI systems and all that kind of stuff. I guess, like, back to Josh, like, how have you found, like, specing characters and the actual combat and the gameplay?
Well, jumping off something Roy just said, I do think, like, the first 10 hours or so are quite overwhelming with how much information it gives you, especially if you jump in on a harder difficulty. I've been playing it on the Blood and Broken Bones one, and I feel like when it just throws you into the world with so much to do, it has the most kind of confusing inventory set screens, even though they've done a lot to kind of improve them. I think it throws a lot of information at you that you kind of need to take in, so it takes a while to kind of get on top of that. And feel like, you know, you're doing well in combat and stuff. But once you get over that initial hump, I just do think it clicks, like mixing signs, upgrading your character, getting the good armor. It all kind of, it feels good. And it doesn't feel like you're on the back foot like you are in the opening hours. To remedy Benroy's issue with the terrible armor, I've finally been hunting the Witcher armor this time around. I've been making it a point to collect all of those and craft all of those. And have a good time, and that's been lush, because my guy right now, Geralt, big Henry, he's got this lovely little it's the cat armor, the Witcher cat armor, so he's got this lovely little blue bodysuit on with his
not the little out. Tiny one, not the he little one that's like, it looks like Aerith, like the little tiny tense, jacket, man. No
is there a specific, like, armor set that I can just put into YouTube and have some person from 2015 tell me where to find this, because I don't care about cheating either way, because I was searching best armor and I was like, all these people's boring opinions on the bed. No one was just going, go here, here, and here. Just, I don't want any of that. I don't want to flirt. Let's just, right. just get to it. Tell me.
It's a 100-hour game. You can't just get in off the bat. And
I just want a bit of armor now. I'm about level 10. Like, to put it into perspective, I never started again when I started playing the other day. I'm just carrying on my save. I'm not doing all that again. By the way, Gwent, crap. I'm not having to go back and play the boring when, again, because I don't want to play it. I just want to, by the way, commend this game so much, because unlike a game like Sekiro, you can dodge enemies in this game. And I don't know about every silver bullet, but when I'm in a sword fight, I prefer to, I like a bit of parrying, but I like my dodging as well, because I like to go, ha! Ha! And I feel good about it.
I might retitle this podcast "And the Madness Set In." Although that would imply that this is something new. We live with this man, or we live with his takes every day. And I've missed this. Yeah, go on.
I was searching for this thing. It's part of it. I don't remember what it's called. I just following what this person has said from 2015. I was time traveling, and I killed some. Are they drowners or something? They're called the
drowners are a thing. Yep.
Killed one of them, and then this big sort of like bird goat thing was on this tower, and we had tried a little tussle. My sword didn't do anything, so I realized, I probably need to go and find or you know, cheat and use the internet, just Google how to kill this thing. But I had to run away. But also dealing with those idiots that fly in the sky, and like, you have to go wait 10 minutes for one to come down, and then you go away.
You have a crossbow to ground the
but
thing.
It's so small.
It's small. You're supposed to fire it anyway. Look, I think that you're already hitting a big old snag, that you want it to be something that you want, and that's not what The Witcher is, which was your problem with Breath of the Wild and Sekiro and everything. I'm preempting this.
I'm going to finish Breath of the Boring. I'm going to finish The Witcher 3.
Yeah.
Or at least do a load of it, because now I'm kind of like, I've got the taste back and I really want to experience this. Because I remember one of the last quests I did before I put it down was the Bloody Baron stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I really enjoyed that sort of focusedness mm-hmm. isn't probably a word, but when I go through one of those sections and I'm back out into the world, mm-hmm. I get more overwhelmed in this than I ever have done in like a Fallout or another massive game that I played. Like, I just don't know kind of what to do next. And when I'm also stressing about said armor that's just breaking after it rains, I'm just really worried. And then I'm in that loop of, and then I'm searching the woods, and then I really enjoy the enemy design. Like, going through the woods is dangerous in this game, and I love it. But at the same time, just let me go and get to the next town. Look, wolves, look, I fought you a minute ago. You're all dead. Don't respawn. It's fine.
I think you should go, you should need to play something more like action focused, because they want you to have that balance. Like, they want you to be the Witcher, like you're, you know, specking potions for certain enemies and you're smithing swords and like planning literally enemy by enemy which signs you're going to use on which one, like how you're going to like trap them in a certain place and do extra damage, then move away and evade. Like, I love all that stuff, but it's way more considered. I think they want you to play it way more considerately than like just, you know, get the cool armor, go kill the big thing.
I think if I get cool armor, then I'd be fine to then go. But like, I just, because I'm looking at myself dressed in like I'm going to dance for some fat king, I'm just like...
Well, you don't need to wear that stuff. You could just wear his starter armor if you're that
bothered.
Yeah, but
then
it.
You get just battered.
Not if you're good at evading. That's one of the best things about the combat system, is that if you're decent at evading and countering, you can totally take on higher level enemies.
But the thing is that like the big goat... someone's probably going to know what this is, but the big goat thingy at like some sort of like tower... where I had to swim underneath and come back out of. I was hitting it with my sword, well, with the sword you're supposed to use on them, the silver sword. Yeah. It wasn't doing any damage whatsoever, so I guess that I need...
Oh, yeah, I mean, I was going to say, it's still level-based, so like you'll have to like chip damage something huge, but that sounds like a weird thing you're not supposed to fight for a while. Josh May, are you still alive? What do you think of all this stuff?
It's kind of madness. I do feel like It's not the way you're supposed to play the game necessarily, because you mentioned that monster there where you have to go in, like, swim underneath and come up from the big tower. Like, yeah. I remember seeing that and thinking that was such a cool moment. Like, I wasn't going to try and get cool ammo. I was just walking around. I saw that thing on top of the castle. I thought, that is so awesome. It felt so gothic and atmospheric and cool. And I wanted to kill that thing, but I couldn't because it was too high of a level. And I both love and dislike that it's so gated by levels. I think it's an issue that Assassin's Creed has as well, the most recent one, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, where you just can't take anything on if it's too far beyond what you're doing. But then that does lend itself quite nicely to the pace of quests, because like you said, Benroy, I also felt overwhelmed, especially when I was going to the big city, Novigrad. By that point, I had so many side quests, so many main quests, and I sort of had a bit of existential dread of, oh God, will I ever finish this? But the fact that most of them are gated by levels made me go like, right, okay, I can sift through all this. I can focus on this. I can make my way up to that and have a nice little sense of progression once I finally get there. But I've been really enjoying exploration this time around. I realized I didn't do much of that when I was playing it originally. I was just doing like the Witcher contracts, the side quests, the main quests. It wasn't going for the question marks. But I was really surprised this time around how detailed those are. Although it's just like the handful of same repeated tasks. You know, you've got your bandit camps, you got your monster nests, you got your abandoned settlements and stuff. Like, each one is visually usually like quite interesting. There's some interesting stories to find there where I couldn't believe that I'd missed so many of them the first time around. So many like cool little environmental details, or cool little monsters, or cool little stories. Like, I thought the world felt so rich, and I almost felt like I unlocked something that everyone's told me beforehand, because I always got like the depth and the nuance and the richness in the quests, but I never really got it while out exploring. I was kind of like Benroy, thinking, you know, I'm sick of these wolves following me, I don't want to fight another handful of drowners. But this time around, having not knowing where the story goes, not wanting to just blitz through it so I could talk to everyone about it, being able to take my time, I've been really enjoying it. And I've got to the point where at the moment, I'm actually way over leveled for the quests that I'm actually doing. So those have been a breeze. But quite nice.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, yeah, sorry. The thing that I absolutely love, that I champion for that game so much, is that I think they found the perfect way to do an open world protagonist, where like you have, you know, main plot drive, and there's, you know, you go find Ciri, but she's clearly very capable, and yes, she's lost, but you can get around to that when you need to. But also, you're a Witcher, and there's all these different contracts that are coming in, and the only way you're going to make coin and have like a reputation and be able to have more conversation options is to go and get lost in that stuff. And I love that pull of just sort of, it was something that I always compare it to one of the games I thought did that the worst, which is Mass Effect 3, where it was just, the game opens with the destruction of Earth, and then it's just like, you know, you're immediately on a timer, and you know, every time like a side mission comes along or something else that you can do, I'm like, well, why would I ever do this, because the main thrust is so important, I clearly don't have time to do anything else. And whereas in The Witcher, I think you're encouraged enough to do everything. And like in terms of that exploration stuff, like I remember, because I'm literally, my save is like 600 hours, like cough. I remember when just spending time going question mark to question mark just to see if they were worthwhile, and finding loads of little like bandit notes, and like, you know, like there was like a rebellion between like a handful of different thieves that sort of like rebelled against their leader or whatever, and just realizing those little micro stories as well. Like I think it nails all that stuff on every single, you know, the micro to the macro levels. But also, Josh, what's your Geralt wearing?
He's wearing the Witcher cat outfit. He was wearing,
oh sorry, you said, yes,
yeah, he was wearing the Witcher griffin outfit for a long time, you know what I mean, like
not the jester's outfit.
Not the jester. Well, yeah, no, not the jester's outfit.
I just want to look cool.
But you can. Josh has found a way.
Find a way, Benroy. You've just got to stick with it and wait until you're the high enough level to wear it. Because even if you do find this stuff, you might not even hit the level requirements. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it might be a waste of time. Might be better off just...
I think I'm still like level 10. But the thing is, when I beat up this guy and then I won some coin, got a trophy. It's like, oh, a trophy, the first time in the years. Then I found this man tied up on a road. I was like, oh, this is interesting. Like, because I really love the world, is what you said. Like, yeah. I love Henry, and I love the world that Henry's in. And I love the fact that this post-war sort of thing, where everyone's like on edge and they're trying to recover from what's happened. And then these guys were like, well, no, we're going to kill him because he's an idiot. I was like, well, no, you're not going to kill him. Like, let him go. Having a little, fighting these like four or five people, getting involved with that, and really like getting used to the combat again. Mm-hmm. And then try and kill the dragon goat thing, like one after the other. Just, it was this whole like sort of course of random events that almost felt like an episode of a TV show. It's really weird how it meshed together. And I can't wait for it to hit 4:30 today. Go back on it right now. Like,
yeah,
I'm in.
I've got that same like just desire to play it. Like this weekend, I had to stop myself from just doing nothing but that. I had to stop myself and make myself be like, right, watch some films, do something else, have a break. Otherwise, you're going to blitz through it way too much. And part of that is because, like you said, Benroy, like the way missions and question marks and everything else sort of like blend into each other. It's so seamless, and so like it gives you the same kind of one more game kind of feel that multiplayer games do. You know what I mean? It's almost like playing Call of Duty, where it's like, oh, there's a question mark over there, I've got to see what happens. Oh, then I'm almost level 17, so I can finally get my cat armor, I'm gonna have to go and do that. But for me, it's like the richness of the world and figuring out what the best way through quests. That's been the most rewarding thing this time around, because the first time I played it, you might hate me for this, but I did the thing where I looked up the optimal answers and the optimal routes through quests online, because I was so stressed out about messing up that I had to know. I just had to know. I was one of those save scrubbers who if something didn't turn out right, I would have to go back and alter it. But this time around, I'm not doing any of that. I'm going in completely blind. So when I was doing the Bloody Baron quest, for instance, this time around, even though I knew all the outcomes, it still felt tense because it was me making those decisions in the moment, and I wasn't entirely sure what actions would lead to which consequences. And that felt so much more impactful when I did finally realize what I'd done and whether or not I'd helped. Like, it was so good, and like it's never black and white, really. Like, it's your choices are never kind of laid out for you. If you think you're doing something, you know, that's right in the moment, you might completely mess up, but then you might get lucky and sort of find your way through it and end up, you know, not pissing everyone off, which is always so satisfying. I was doing the mission with Dijkstra in the in Novigrad, and I remember the first time around, annoyed him so much to the point where he wouldn't talk or help me. But this time around, I managed to, you know, I disappointed him a little bit, but I made friends with him. And now we have this like buddy relationship that I totally missed on the playthrough. Like when he was at the ball that you go to with Triss, and we had a little talk, and he's wearing his pig mask, and we have a little joke. And he said that he liked me, and I was like, oh, how did I miss this the first time around? Like, this is such a completely different playthrough here, just because I made slightly different choices, and you would never talk. You would never really get that, because although these games are often, you know, they're marketed on the amount of different outcomes to quests and stuff. For a lot of time, like in a lot of cases, I always think of it big picture. I always think of, okay, so these are the monumental things that happen if I do this. I don't think of those smaller flavor moments of, well, you know, this might not directly impact the story, but it's going to change the relationships with characters. It's going to change the way how I see them. And looking at those little nuances and differences this time around has been so satisfying.
That's the stuff that I just think that's it's a weird sentence, but those ancillary things, all those side things, are more of the overall whole for The Witcher 3. Because I love the main story, I love where it goes, I love the Ciri and the whole thing with the ugliest man on earth and how it leads to that big final battle against the Wild Hunt and everything. But I love living as a Witcher. Like, I just want to do that. I want to take on supernatural, be the supernatural bounty hunter, take on all these random contracts, and just be this sort of entity that goes from village to village, taking on whatever, and spending some time playing a bit of Gwent every now and then, and just sort of doing whatever comes along. Like, for me, that is that game. It's the Witcher simulator. Like, yeah, there is a main story, but the side content, the more meaningless it feels on the side, the chances are the more memorable it's actually going to be, because you've had to seek it out. It's this sort of like dynamic interaction thing in CDPR. Like, they just, the amount of just hashtag content in that game that they've put in every little pixel of it, it's just ridiculous.
I will say that I think I've become a bit broken recently, becoming like more playing for check boxes, where this game is reteaching me patience, and like I'm trying to like go, no, give me what I want, and it's not giving me what I want, it's making me work for what I want.
Yeah,
and I kind of
like Breath of the Wild, mate.
Boring. It's not boring, okay, just don't kill me.
It's all right, they're not gonna come for you.
But no, The Witcher, it's kind of teach me again to just chill out and just play at its pace and not try and force it and go through. And like the 5 hours I put back into it over the weekend around like social playing with my friends, like I was really enjoying it, and I can't wait to just get this week sort of like just let it all hang out a bit. Just let's go Henry, and just sink into this world and finally play the game, I think, how it's kind of meant to be sort of approached, and not shout at it for me breaking my sword and looking like a jester.
It's funny you should mention that. Yeah, sorry, I was just saying, it's like funny you should mention that, Ben Roy, because I think I have a similar sort of experience as you did there, because back in the day, back in 2015, I was the exact same. I was sort of trying to just tick the boxes, get through the missions, you know, follow the waypoint, not look at my surroundings, not live in the world. But I think after replaying Red Dead Redemption 2 at the start of this year, it's sort of, again, that game for me taught me to be patient and to indulge in the kind of minutiae of everything that's going on, and not just rush from point A to point B. So now that I've jumped from that to The Witcher within the space of a couple of months, I'm playing it again, how it probably is intended to be made, and I'm getting so much more out of it. I already loved it. Like, that's the best thing about it. I already loved it back in the day when I was arguably playing it a little bit wrong, but this time around, it's even better. Like, I can't believe how well it holds up from a, like you said, like a holistic standpoint. Everything informs, all the systems inform each other, the story comes together, the character comes together, the world is still absolutely gorgeous. And even in spite of some of the things that I do think are a little bit dated or not as polished as they could be, I think it more or less it completely holds up.
Mm-hmm. And Geralt, and I should say, and Geralt is a compelling character. It's all this mm-hmm. that you want from an open world game, but without the blank slateness of a Fallout. It's got someone that you care about, and you're invested in his story and the people he knows. Like mm-hmm. that is literally what I want in a nutshell. I just bounced off it in a hard way, and now I'm back.
Geralt's so much funnier than I remembered him being.
Like, yeah,
I thought he was just like emotionless before, but he's an absolute banter hound this time around. He's mugging everyone off. He's got the driest, most sarcastic wit. It's excellent. I love it.
I don't know what version of the game you guys played in 2015. Well, I don't know what you've been doing that you didn't have all this back then. I'm glad you've got it now. But yeah, in terms of like the whole thing just being this insanely detailed like tapestry where you can just pull at any thread of it and all this other stuff will come alongside it. Like everything plays off everything else. I'm glad you've kind of, you're swimming back in the oceans of The Witcher again. It sounds pretty good.
Getting ready for Cyberpunk. So, you know, like I want to get this game done before I then play the next thing, because I'm definitely going to get that. And I feel like I owe it to myself and owe it to like to try it one more time. And I think it's actually working this time.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And we might end up doing like a follow-up depending on how much more time you guys put into it. I think I still have it installed. It's like a 90 gig thing with all of its DLC. But we should maybe do a series of games that we're returning to whilst everything is in a bit of a kerfuff. But in terms of another question from the hashtag WCGP tag on Twitter from Mr. Blue Sky, who says, when is a game too short? Which is an interesting take. My mind went to Control because I still haven't gone back to that game's DLC yet. But it has to be when a game leaves you with a sense of disappointment. I think it's all to do with pacing and payoff. I think Streets of Rage 4, I just finished that yesterday, it's only like 13 stages long, but some of those stages are only like 5 or 6 minutes. And what is there is immaculate, but when I hit the credits, I still felt like it was a bit short. So I don't know, I think it's a pacing thing. I think if a game has story elements, then you need to not nail a 3-act structure, but you need to go out on a high. Like it needs to feel like something that is a finale rather than just we ran out of dev time or we needed something, you know, something got in the way, so we're slamming the credits here. But what do you guys think?
I was just going to say, jumping on the Control thing, I think that's after finishing Quantum Break recently, I think that's just Sam Lake's style of writing, but he always leaves something on a cliffhanger or a potential thing. Like Alan Wake ended with a massive cliffhanger. Quantum Break ends on like some sort of semi-cliffhanger, and so did Control. But I think the fact that we're getting these questions answered in the Control DLC, sure, people hate that stories continue, but he kind of writes his things as like, say, episodes of TV or a film where it's going to continue. And it's funny you say the Streets of Rage 4, because I'm going to be diving into that on the bank holiday. I think games like that, I can see it being short, but I think it's weird, like, do they get a pass if they're intended to be played over and over again? Because I feel like Streets of Rage 4 is one where it wants you to then play on a harder difficulty afterwards. And say like Resident Evil 3, where you then finish it and then you go back and then you play it again on another high difficulty to experience it, and things have changed throughout. I know that sometimes the length is a weird one, but at the same time, I think some games can be better for not being 100, 600 hour epics.
Yeah, it's obviously like case by case. Just to throw in on the RE3 thing, or even I think for Streets of Rage 4, I think price is a massive thing, and it depends how much you paid for it at the time.
Game Pass.
Yeah, Game Pass solves a lot of it. There's just a lot of assumptions baked into like, oh, well, I paid this much, or it is this story heavy thing, or I paid this much for a story. There's a lot of like nuance to it. Josh, what were you going to say? Sorry.
I was going to pretty much just repeat everything you said. I do think it's like case by case, and I do think it comes down to pacing and quality, because I think if something's like a complete 10 out of 10 and it's only like 3 or 4 hours, to me that justifies full price, because it's a really special experience and it feels complete and good. For me, a short game is only disappointing if it feels rushed, if it feels unfinished, if it feels like corners are being cut. Some of my favorite games of all time are like 2 hours long, an hour and a half long, like walking simulators that have a beginning, middle, and end, and they tell a self-contained story. But it always feels like that's how long they were intended to be. My issue only comes when something feels like it's being cut short. If it feels like the developers had bigger ambitions and it's not being paced correctly to have this nice payoff at the end, it doesn't feel complete. That's the only time where I feel like, oh, short change. And then I start thinking about, you know, well, was this worth the price? Was this worth this much money? Was it worth my time? Do I feel satisfied and stuff like that? So I think ultimately, you know, I don't know. I was going to say a short game is always better than a bloated one. I don't know never whether that's true.
Yeah, I don't know if it, I don't think it's as cut and dry as that. I think it is just case by case. It's how much of the developer's intent or the creative's intent comes through. Because it's a great comparison that, like, Benroy mentioned about the other Remedy games, because I like those cliffhangers in terms of they made, like, especially Alan Wake's one, that if it intentionally creates conversations, that's cool. In Remedy's, in Control's case, I just felt like it just ended. It was just, here's some credits, we're done, and obviously we've got the DLC plan. But yeah, it's weird, because how the hell do you analyze intent? But when a game is too short, I think I just have to hang it on disappointment or like a general feeling of negativity whenever the credits roll. If it feels like there should have been more for whatever reason, then that's too short.
Yeah, I feel like as well, though, with developers and stuff, I think there's a real fear, especially in AAA games now, of making a game that's perceived to be too short. Because for the longest time, especially at the very end of the Xbox 360 era, we were getting these super short games, these super short campaigns for full price. And it sort of did feel like developers were trying to give us less, and there was a major backlash against that, and that led to all the open world boom and people being kind of wary of shorter games. And I totally get that from like a financial perspective, you know what I mean? Like I used to have to, you know, trade in all my games to buy a new game, and would be barely disappointed if I'd finished it in a weekend or something. But I just think, like everything, you need balance. You need that intent to come through. You need developers to not be worried, but also you need players to understand that sometimes a shorter experience isn't inherently worse than a longer one. You know, that experience can still be worth £60, £50 or whatever if it's satisfying and complete and good and special and not bloated.
Should you say, and if we take Alien Isolation, for example, too long in the back half, you could have cut, was it like 5 hours off the end of that, maybe? Mm-hmm. Maybe 3 hours extra on the end, that you'd be fine. But towards the end, that just kept going and going. And so I really enjoy this game, but when is it going to let me go home and not be eaten by a xenomorph? What's going on here?
I remember thinking, an example that kind of rolls everything together for me was Inside, and like having waited for that for, I think it was like 6 years, maybe 7 years between Limbo and then Inside, finishing Inside in one sitting, like downloading it that morning, finishing it in the afternoon, and thinking like, man, that was really short. And then having that feeling, but then going like, okay, but what would I have done? And the answer was nothing else. That game is pristine and absolutely perfect. And then absolutely loving it for that. It was just, I don't know. There's so many variables. Like, it's just prices will change, you know, things will feel more worthwhile over time. Like, yeah, it's a fascinating thing. We could always revisit it and do a more blown out version for a full pod. But thanks very much to Mr. Blue Sky for that. You can also head over to the Twitter tag hashtag WCGP and leave your own questions, and we'll get to them in the future. For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Benroy Turner.
Goodbye.
And Josh Brown, who seems to have died.
He's frozen.
Paused, he's gone. I'm going to assume that Josh Brown would say goodbye. Now there's multiple Josh Browns have joined.
Another Josh Brown.
Hello? Am I here? What's going on?
You are, but your clone's just sitting with a frozen face. We're going to leave that in the edit because it's just too weird to not do.
Sorry, not to take over this pod, like I've just burst in. Why does my computer keep doing this? It did it in the Assassin's Creed video the other day where I couldn't get in, and I was ruining a video there, and it's just cracked out just as you're about to sign off here.
I tell you what, if you want like a fun little Easter egg, head over to me and Kirsten's reaction to the Assassin's Creed Valhalla trailer and just watch for a muted Josh dropping in about 6 minutes in. Just drop it in, sitting there, not knowing he's on cam, and then leaving, coming back and leaving again. It's a good time. Josh, my friend, all I need from you is a lovely goodbye.
Oh, goodbye, everyone. Thank you for putting up with me.
Catch you all next time.
Bye. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.